I spent last week at the 2017 version of the Cape Pierce Marine Science and Yupik Culture Camp, a camp held each year at a far-flung place called Cape Pierce, found in the extreme southwest corner of the refuge. For the most part, I'm the buck stops here guy for the camp, responsible for its planning and execution, and it's one of the big ticket items for which I was hired to do. This year's camp, as with every single one of which I've been a part of, by and large went off without a hitch. In fact, this year's camp did so even more than has been the norm in pretty much every possible way. We accomplished all but one of the planned activities, and the only reason the one didn't happen is no opportunities became available. The kids were just downright fabulous. Fun to be around, eager to learn, and with terrific helpful attitudes. We had two bonus features to this year's camp. Biologist Doug Holt was on hand to not only get some of his work done, but to share with the students about that work and how it was done. Also, the female chaperone this year was artist Shauna Pickenpaugh of Lander, Wyoming, who guided the students through a number of art activities that took advantage of the magnificent sights to be seen at Cape Pierce. Yeah, it was a really, really good year this year. And, as with other years, we got to see and study a fair amount of wildlife. Let me share with you some of the species we were able to view over the course of our week at Cape Pierce. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. The first furry critter to put in an appearance, on our first full day, has a day recognizing it in our fair state of Alaska. I'm talking about the hoary marmot, and the day I refer to as Marmot Day, which a few years ago officially took the place of Groundhog's Day across the last frontier. During a long hike to the tip of the Cape, we happened to pass a marmot, sunning itself on a large rocky outcropping. So concerned was it by our presence that several times, as the kids nudged forward to get photos, it lolled from its stomach to its back and back again, catching as much sunlight as evenly as possible. You could almost imagine that it had on sunblock and was working on a tan. Hoary marmots are the largest members of the squirrel family. From a numbers standpoint, that translates to a body weight of about 10 to 12 pounds and a body length of 30 inches. For those who haven't seen one, they look something like a groundhog in shape, though the color is quite different. They are predominantly grayish-silver, with a darker underside and dark top to their head, which contrasts starkly with a white patch across the bridge of the nose. They also have dark brown to black feet, which lend themselves to the animal's Latin name of caligata, which means booted. They blend in incredibly well with the rocky areas they inhabit. They are true hibernators, meaning their body temperature and all bodily functions are greatly reduced as they snooze away the winter in their dens. They are most active during the mornings and late afternoons. There was nothing particularly active about the one that we saw that was clearly enjoying a lazy day in the sun. The gold medal, A-list marine mammal we hope to see at Cape Pierce is the Pacific walrus, the sightings of which can be somewhat hit and miss through the summer months, but more of a sure thing during the months of fall. Alas, we saw none. Our consolation prize, as it were, when it came to seeing marine mammals was the harbor seal, of which there were oodles and oodles of them out there, day and night, 24/7. There are two very frequent ways harbor seals are spotted at Cape Pierce. At low tide, they can be seen by the hundreds on exposed mud flats in the middle of Nanvak Bay. They are also seen along the beaches, their heads poking up from the water surface as they look on with curiosity. Coloration varies, but there are two basic patterns: light gray sides and belly with dark spots, or a dark background with light rings. Through good binoculars, both can be seen in abundance when they're hauled out on the mud flats. When on land, they're not at their locomotive best, moving awkwardly through a caterpillar-like motion, due to their pelvic bones being fused. They have no such issues when in the water, though, as we saw on a number of occasions. No, they are exceedingly graceful and efficient swimmers. Size-wise, they can be 5 or 6 feet long and weigh as much as 250 pounds. When it comes to terrestrial species, I'm always hoping to see bears, and most of the time I'm not disappointed. This year, though, the bears and walruses must have been vacationing at the same non-Cape Pierce location. Minus the bears, we did have a couple of larger species put in a number of appearances. I'm talking about a couple of bull caribou we saw on several occasions. The larger of the two we saw multiple times daily, often just out in front of the cabins. Of course, one of the things that make caribou cool to see is the size of their antlers, which, relative to their bodies, are always impressive. The larger bull we watched was, in my opinion, a medium to medium-large specimen that might top out at large once the summer growing season is over. Caribou are certainly an iconic Alaskan species. They have large concave hooves that provide superior support on iffy terrain, such as snow and tundra, as well as serving as efficient paddles in the water. They are the only deer family members in which the females, called cows, also grow antlers, though a cow's antlers are much smaller than a bull's. In color, they're a dark brown in summer, and that dark brown grows lighter as fall and winter approach. Mature bulls can run in excess of 400 pounds, with cows averaging half of that or a little more. Most caribou migrate, though there is a non-migratory herd on Togiak Refuge on the Nishigek Peninsula. The two we saw last week spent their time migrating away from teenagers, biting insects, and, on one day, a helicopter that was brought into sling load collected odds and ends that had accumulated at the cabins. One animal that always seems to attract a lot of attention from the teenagers is the Pagerus hirsutus culus, which is the Latin name for the hairy hermit crab. At low tide, we normally find oodles of them in small pools of water amongst the rocks, and this year was no different. Some pools, the size of an average bathtub, contain dozens of crabs, crawling about and looking to keep a low profile. Hairy hermit crabs are found from the Pribilofs to southern California and are pretty easy to recognize thanks to white leg bands that they have. They are found in water from up close to shore, where we found them, out to over 300 feet in depth. They live in the shells of other gastropods, and as with other hermit crabs, one pincher is larger than the other. The larger one is used for defense, while the smaller one is used for feeding. They're not terribly large. The ones we saw might have been a half an inch to an inch in length when measuring just their carapace. While shy at first, it didn't take a lot of time for them to start moving around when picked up by the kids. And make no mistake, pick them up they did. Marmots weren't the only small, furry creature that we saw. We also saw a number of Arctic ground squirrels, and I must say, they looked like they're doing well for themselves, if body shape is any indication. They were not lean in the least. Arctic ground squirrels, called parka squirrels by some, are the largest North American ground squirrel species, and Alaska's only ground squirrel species. As the largest North American species, that puts them at about a pound and a half and a bit over a foot in length, with a 5-inch tail. They have a tan coloration with a slight grizzled appearance on their backs and a lighter tan or beige on the belly. They are built for a life underground, with a sausage-shaped body, short, strong legs, and sharp claws with soft foot pads, which aid them in manipulating food and dirt. They live in burrows and establish colonies that often consist of multiple burrows and a maze of tunnels beneath the surface. They are diverse, opportunistic feeders. Most of their diet revolves around other types of vegetation, including leaves, seeds, stems, flowers, roots, berries, and grasses. They will also consume mushrooms and meat from freshly killed animals, including other ground squirrels. They are also hibernators, so when the months are warm enough to keep them up and about, they spend a lot of time putting on weight for the months they hibernate, often doubling their weight between the time when they wake up and when they go back into their dens to hibernate again. One of the really cool facts about Arctic ground squirrels involves their hibernating. They have the ability to drop their body temperatures below freezing, to something like 27 or 28 degrees, during a condition called supercooling. This is the coldest body temperature found in a mammal anywhere on Earth. Because one of the more fascinating things about Cape Pierce is the diversity of bird species found there, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention at least one bird species. We saw the usual suspects, seabirds such as murres, kittiwakes, puffins, and cormorants, and land birds such as the various sparrow species. Throw in a few eagles, ravens, and a bajillion tree swallows. But the one I'll choose to mention today is the snow bunting. The snow bunting is a 6-inch long, sparrow-like bird with a wingspan of about a foot. They have been something of a bane to me in that I've tried for several years to get a good photo, and I'm still trying. There are plenty of snow buntings at Cape Pierce, but I haven't been able to get one to sit still long enough at a workable distance to come away with anything that I'm happy with. Male snow buntings in the summer are quite striking. They are snow white with a few jet black parts, including across their backs. A cool snow bunting fact is that they place their nests deep in cracks or other cavities in the rocks. While such locations are fairly secure from predators, they do pose a different problem. Rocks can remain quite cold even in the summer. The solution is that they line their nest heavily with fur and feathers, and the female remains on the nest for most of the incubation period. The male feeds her while she's incubating, since she's not able to leave the nest to feed for herself. In closing today, I'd like to give a shout-out to this year's students. Thomas, Noah, Sam, Mayla, Roxanne, Susie, and Ryan, and to John Mark of Quinnahawk, Shauna Pickenpah of Wyoming, and Doug Holt of Dillingham for helping to make this year's camp so very successful. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.